and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
Have you been enjoying the Olympics?
I must admit, until a day or two ago, I was completely oblivious to the fact it was even going on.
How can you be completely oblivious to the Olympics going on?
Well, in recent years, I've kind of shunned regular TV in favour of YouTube and Netflix and Amazon Prime. I've kind of got so fed up with listening to the depressing stream of news on the radio that I've kind of turned the radio off as far as, you know, anything like newsy or political goes, because it's kind of getting me down. So yeah. I've been a bit head in the sand for the last few weeks, and I think it's making me feel a bit better in general.
Are you going to be one of those people that eventually goes and lives in the middle of a jungle or something? Or
no, because you wouldn't get good internet connection there.
Because I watch a lot of that Ben Fogle thing where he goes to see people who live in remote places in the world. Some of them have got some internet access, but some of them not. You can vary it, but I could see you doing that. I'd quite like to do that, but I'd quite like to be away from humans entirely. But I think I'd still want to be in touch with what's going on in the world.
No, I think for me, it's I want to live in the current world with all my mod cons and electronics and internet things that I enjoy. But I really am sick to death of listening to anything related to the shambles of a government that are, you know, in quotes, leading us anywhere. And that really isn't even a left or right thing. They're both equally useless, in my opinion, the left and the right. So, yeah, but I feel like it slowly grinds you down without you realizing it, focusing too much on current events and what the latest shambles is, what the latest embarrassment to the country is. I just don't like it. And I think it cheers you up a little bit if you try and distance yourself a little bit. I'll go back to it. I'll dip a toe in here and there, but I think I was overexposed.
Well, I think that's never a good thing to be, overexposed. I think the Olympics does make you feel better. So I never used to really take that much interest in the Olympics. It never really bothered me. I thought it's pretty dull. But then I think London 2012 changed that. It was such an exciting thing for it to be on home soil. So ever since then, I've sort of taken interest. And I've been following this one. I haven't watched quite as much as I would have liked to, because it's strange times, because it's in Japan. But Great Britain doing well. 35 medals so far as we record this on the Monday evening.
That's pretty good.
11 golds, 12 silver and 12 bronze so far.
What I have found to be quite depressing again from, you know, occasionally flicking on the news. As I say, I've been more and more aware of the, you know, news in the Olympics in the last few days.
But yeah,
if you win anything but a gold medal, no one gives a shit, do they? they name all the gold medal winners. Oh, and so-and-so on BMX has won a gold medal, and then they give you a life story. Oh, and in other news, there were 3 silvers, 2 bronze. No one gives a shit about those people, do they?
Oh, I think they do. I think you're obviously listening to media outlets that don't give a shit about that sort of thing. And, I mean, there are people. You know, these sort of professional gobshites, the sort of Piers Morgans, Mike Parry has become one of these people. I used to listen to Mike Parry on the radio years ago and quite liked him, but he's turned into such a tosser. But I think he's one of these people who just says the most outrageous thing because it keeps him in the public eye.
Or it keeps him in a job.
Yeah, I think that's basically what he does now, but he's sort of one of those professional gobshites. And he was on the other day banging on about, no, you know, they shouldn't even have silver and bronze medals. They should only have the golds. You think, oh, just fuck off. You know, these people who've trained so hard, you know, they might be slightly disappointed that they've only got a silver or bronze, but they've still got an Olympic medal that in years to come, they'll be able to look at with pride and show their family. Do you know what I mean? It's an amazing achievement, that, isn't it?
But people still do what Mike Parry's doing without even realising they're doing it. It's become so accepted that unless it's gold, it's rubbish. It's toilet paper.
Yeah.
Unless it's gold. Because they were doing this great thing about Tom Daley the other day. They were trying to celebrate him and were really pleased for him. But there was still that little backhanded compliment in there Tom Daley has finally got his gold medal at the fourth time of asking. You know, the underlying flow of that. Oh, he's finally got a gold medal. All the rest, who cares? All that shite, bronze and silver, rubbish. He's finally got the gold at the fourth time of asking. Whey!
Yeah.
He's got loads of other medals, but apparently only the gold matters.
Perhaps that's the world we live in now, that, you know, you tell them that it's the taking part that counts, but actually your behaviour is totally contradictory to that feeling. You want to win. Yeah, and I've never had that winner's attitude. I think that's just why I'm probably going to never make it in life in any capacity, because I've never had that. I've never had a really competitive spirit. I just don't see if I do something, as long as I enjoy it, that's fine. I suppose it's because I've never really been good at any sport. But I mean, just in life, you know, it's like people, we've come across them, right? People who work in sales, for example, who treat it like it's a fucking sport. And they've got to become like the best salesman. You see the sort of people who go on The Apprentice, and I'm not saying all salespeople are like this, but it is that sort of mentality that goes on. And just think, just stop it. You've sold some, I don't know, whatever it is you're selling, well done, you've sold it, but you haven't won a gold medal at the Olympics, so just shut the fuck up, you dick.
Yeah, I think it's true, and I think it's like you say, like school sports days and stuff. I think it's all gone a bit silly now, a bit too far, where, you know, and I'm all for, you know, let's include everybody and make everyone feel as positive as we can, but let's not pretend that there are no winners and losers. There clearly is. Everyone gets a contribution medal or a taking part certificate or some shit.
Yeah.
And you're not allowed to cheer the kids on anymore. And it's all about the taking part, and nobody wins, nobody loses. We all just took part. And I think, well, if that was the mentality we're supposed to adopt as a nation, then why would we all get so upset about the Euros loss?
Yeah, but I don't think that really goes on in, and I'm not saying there aren't schools and places to do that, but even when I worked at the school, which isn't that long ago, the sports day had winners. There was still winners.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting that we should go so far that we should start sending racist abuse to young boys who lose the school beanbag toss. I'm just suggesting that we need to establish that winning and losing are still actually a part of life and something you need to be comfortable with. When you win, it's great. When you lose, you need to learn how to take it on the chin.
That's it. Lose with grace and dignity.
That's almost a more important lesson than winning and not being a dickhead about winning as well.
What I love about the Olympics, though, because it's interesting you talk about sports day, because what I find with the Olympics is you suddenly find yourself watching a sport. It's a weird thing, because I don't want to disparage it as a sport, but it is like watching grown-ups doing children's stuff.
Olympics is like a massive sports day, isn't it?
Well, it's like they've got BMX now, right? Well, I think they've had BMX for a while. This year they've had trampolining. I've only seen little clips of it. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure there's a great skill involved, but it just makes me laugh. It's sort of these commentators go, "Well, that's a lovely move on the trampoline." You're just bouncing up and down.
But you see, I find even some of the more traditional Olympic events slightly ludicrous. Like, I know recently we won a gold medal in it, so everyone will be very excited about it. But pummel horse, which to my eyes is like breakdancing on an ironing board.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a gymnastic sport, isn't it? And that's been there for a long time, isn't it? That's like a thing. I mean, did you ever have to do anything on a pummel horse at school?
No.
Apart from vault over it.
No, I was tall, so I was told I had to do the hurdles, because that's the logic. Tall guy, easy to get over a hurdle, that's what we'll make him do.
But surely you must have had to, did they not give you like the whole range of stuff? We had to do bits on the pommel horse, I seem to remember.
No,
you had to jump off the springboard and go over it.
No, didn't do that.
No?
No.
I was missing.
You went to a slightly posher school than I did.
No, this was at my primary school.
Oh, wow.
This was at primary school. We had to do that. In the summer, we used to do softball and that sort of stuff outside. But in the winter, anyone of a certain age, and I don't know if they still have them in schools. I'm not sure if they did. I think they did in the school I worked at. But in the hall, there was always like the PE equipment that you could pull out, like the climbing stuff and the ropes and those sorts of things. So we used to have that at primary school, and there was certainly a pommel horse, and we used to have to run at it and then vault over it. But I always misjudged where you had to jump on the springboard over it. So I don't think I ever achieved getting over the fucking thing.
Yeah, we never had to do anything with springboards or pommel horses. No, it was very much straightforward. We went to Crystal Palace track.
Yeah.
And we had to basically just use the track and run around it. And, you know, there'd be hurdles. That was a bit of an expense. So, you know, that was probably the most exciting thing to watch visually, because there was an extra hurdle, a literal hurdle in the way.
Yeah.
And then there was the, I can't remember if we did Wellington boot or beanbag. I think by the time it was secondary school, it was probably beanbag, because that's slightly more professional than Wellington boot. Couldn't quite afford the stone thing, the shot put.
I was in the, I got in the shot put team in my first year at secondary school. I was shit at it, but they somehow put me in the team. But we had to do that, the javelin. We had javelins. I was always terrible at that. I could never quite get that right. I mean, you'd have thought a javelin's quite easy. It's the most aerodynamic. It's like a big dart. It's very aerodynamic. You'd have thought I could easily throw that. I shit at it. Absolutely. The discus, I was dizzy on the first turn. So there's no, I don't know. I've lost my bearings. I don't know where I'm throwing it. I'm probably knocking out people as I'm throwing it. I mean, yeah, absolutely useless. So this year, obviously, you've got the trampolining. I think this is the first year, I might be wrong, but the first year they've had surfing. I watched a bit of the surfing the other day. They've had skateboarding, of course, this time as well. So I thought, well, I wonder what other sports they've had in the past, because I knew that there'd been strange sports in the Olympics.
Okay.
In the past. I mean, for years, they had tug of war.
Is that gone now then, is it?
They haven't had that since 1920, tug of war.
I'm really up to date, as you can tell.
Yeah, don't they have that anymore? I seem to remember seeing that. That was a staple of sports day at school, the tug of war, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
And I was always part of that. It was always, oh, get the big boys in. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, anyway, right.
Just get them to pull the rope. I mean, ridiculous, but there we go. Live pigeon shooting was an Olympic event only once at the 1900 Olympic Games in Paris.
I seem to remember back on our days on the radio, I covered that. I think for Beat the Cheat, you gave me the subject of the Olympics,
oh, or that vice rings versa. A bell. Yes,
and we did this live pigeon shooting, which thankfully they changed to clay pigeon.
Yeah, because the winner killed 21 birds.
It's a bloodbath.
And over the course of the competition, they reckon 300 pigeons were killed.
Christ.
I mean, as long as they were used afterwards, you know, to feed the athletes or something, then it probably wouldn't have been in vain.
Well, I mean, he said it was in France, didn't you? I imagine it was all sorts of French cooking going on with pigeon.
When I went to France as a kid, there was a weird thing. You'd walk down the road and the butchers would have pigeons hanging in the windows. And you'd go to one of the squares, like Trafalgar Square is full of pigeons, right? You go to a square in France, and from my memory, there was like, there's no pigeons, because they're all hanging up in the butchers' windows. But I don't know if that's still the case now.
I don't know.
Have you ever eaten pigeon?
No, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't eat, but I've never eaten pigeon, or at least I don't think I've ever eaten pigeon.
I cannot understand. I mean, I get the logic that, you know, it's pretty close to a chicken, kind of. But when you see, you know, go walk down any London street,
yeah,
and you see a pigeon pecking up and flicking up in the air the same old bit of disgusting old cigarette butt. And then going back to it.
Yeah.
Or maybe some vomit from last night's pub.
Yeah.
Just a sea of that on the pavement, and they're picking through the bits of leftover stomach bile in the middle of the street. And you think, I must kill that thing and eat it, because it's had a really, really nice diet in its life. You know, you hear about graze, you know, free range and all this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm, cigarette butts and vomit. That's what I want my pigeons fed on.
They've always got like gammy legs, haven't they, pigeons?
Or if they're lucky to have two.
Yeah. No, but the truth is that, although I said that I don't remember seeing many pigeons in squares, you'd have thought pigeons that you actually eat would be bred, so they're not just your feral pigeons picking up bits of vomit and chewing gum and cigarette butts. But maybe that gives it some sort of unique flavour. if it's perhaps just gives it sort of a tobacco-y type aftertaste.
Smoked pigeon.
It's I'm getting a sort of tinge of nicotine through the pigeon meat. It might be a bit of an extra bit of taste that you can get.
Yeah, you think it's been slow roasted on a grill with, you know, beer soaked wood burnings on and stuff, and it's got that lovely smoky taste. Yeah. In reality, it's been walking up London, you know, flicking 20 Rothmans off the floor.
Have you ever heard that thing where you get you're served a chicken, but it's been cooked with a can of beer shoved up it?
I have seen it done, and I've heard of beer can chicken, but I have not personally eaten it. I don't really see anything wrong with that.
No, I mean, I've had it.
It's a waste of beer, but...
Well, I don't really think it adds anything to the taste from having had it. I don't know if it's supposed to. It's a very odd thing. And because I think I've talked about this before, I don't like food that comes with bones and a lot of effort. And to get like a whole chicken come to the table with a beer can up it, there's a lot of having to... It's like you've got to dissect the fucking thing before you can eat it. So I didn't really enjoy the whole beer can up a chicken's arse thing.
Yeah, I was of the assumption that they would cook it with the beer can, but then remove it and then serve it. I didn't think it should be brought to the customer complete with can up its ass.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's how it came when I've had it. It came.
I'm sure it shouldn't have, but okay.
No, that's probably the way it's served. You don't do that with other animals, do you? You don't sort of get a lamb and just cook that with a beer can up its ass and serve that.
No, that's true. You don't.
I suppose because you don't normally serve that bit of the lamb.
That's, no.
That's sort of removed.
This is why I think we got the sack from our job. We started off talking about the Olympics.
Right, here's some other sports that are in the Olympics.
Go on.
Solo synchronized swimming. I mean, that's just dancing on your own in water, isn't it? That's just madness.
Well, surely one person can't possibly fail to be synchronized with themselves.
Have you seen me dance? I think it didn't last long. Here's another couple. Croquet was in the Olympics for a while.
Okay.
One-handed weightlifting. I mean, that's really showing off, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't be
showing off that much because you've still got the limitations of possibility. You can only lift what's possible with one arm.
But you could really push the boundaries with that, though, couldn't you?
I mean,
no one's
going to break the Olympic world record with one-armed weightlifting and find out that it's actually even beaten the two-armed. It's kind of silly, that one.
We don't know. You might be able to pick up the same as someone can pick up with two hands. You might be of super strength. You could do that with one. That'd be pretty impressive. I mean, I'd watch that. I mean, you see people buckling when they're doing the two-handed one.
Have you ever seen the really... I'm sorry if you're a bit queasy listening to this, anyone, but have you ever seen when a weightlifter's really struggling, you know, the head's wobbling, the arms have... And then all of a sudden, blood shoots out the nose. And you just think, oh my God, put it down, man. Yeah. You can't do it.
That's...
That
goes too far for me. I think anything where you're sort of, there's involuntary bleeding, that sort of goes beyond the realms of sport, I think.
And that's why they wear those big belts. That's to stop hemorrhages.
You see, hernias.
They're to keep hernias in.
God, it shouldn't really be a sport, should it? If you need a belt to keep your stomach from coming out, that shouldn't be a sport.
What did you think it was for? Just a sort of giant cummerbund?
I just thought it was like a fashion statement. Who's got the nicest belt? I didn't know what it was for, but I've learned something today. Every day's a school day, isn't it?
To keep in your hernias, yeah.
Wow.
Every day's a school sports day.
That proves to me it shouldn't be a sport. If you're going to bleed from your nose and you've got to wear specialist equipment to stop yourself having internal injuries, it's not good. I don't know if they're doing it this year or whether it's in it anymore, but they used to do the race walking, didn't they?
Speed walking. Is this where there are very strict rules and one foot must be in contact with the ground at all times?
I would imagine so, yeah. And you've got to walk like you're holding a pee up your ass or a beer can up your ass or something. It's a weird thing now. I don't know if they do it anymore.
I hope they do, because I reckon I'd clean up at that.
It says both feet must stay in contact with the ground at all times.
Well, how? That renders walking impossible.
Well, no, that must be why they end up looking so odd, because you're not allowed to, you've got to move your feet without actually lifting them off the ground. That must be quite a difficult thing to achieve, because your natural instinct is to lift your feet as you walk. You're told as a child, lift your feet when you walk, don't shuffle. This is basically shuffling. It's Olympic shuffling.
So you've just got to sort of thrust your way across the track with both feet.
Surely you've got this wrong. It's all on your heels. You can lift your foot, but your heel still has to be in contact. I'm just looking at a picture now, and it's their heel and then the tip of their foot, it looks like. That must explain the weird walk.
I'd love to see it now. Oh, I suppose it is possible if you were to drag your heel along the floor and then drag the other heel along the floor.
Yeah, but I don't think it's about dragging. I think they've got to learn how to walk without dragging, because surely dragging is not going to help you, is it? That's going to impede you.
I think you've made a mistake here.
I haven't.
You said both feet must stay on the floor at all times.
I'm reading it. This is what
how
it says.
How the hell do you get any forward momentum doing that?
I don't know.
Dragging your feet.
Well, that must be where the skill is. You can't just be dragging your feet. I mean, that's just not... That's not the way they're going to do it, is it?
I'm going to have to YouTube video this later on and watch as many as I can.
Okay, right. A couple more for you. There was a thing called le canne, which was sort of like fencing, but with canes, wooden canes. And they would sort of basically thrash each other with long sticks. It's just for sadists, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
That only ran very briefly in the Olympics. Pistol dueling. It sounds much better than it actually is, because you would assume it would be two athletes having a duel and one of them would end up dead.
10 steps, 10 paces, turn around, bang.
Yeah, yeah. But they basically had stuffed dummies that shoot. No wonder it didn't last, that.
No.
That doesn't sound exciting at all.
No, that's a big letdown.
And rope climbing.
I always thought it was supposed to be impossible to climb a rope.
What do you mean? I mean, honestly, at school, didn't you ever have to climb a rope?
Never.
Oh, God. I mean, it was fucking hard. I used to hate that. I wouldn't get very far up the rope, to be honest. But some kids, they were like very skilled at that. Do you know some kids like natural climbers? We had this kid, right, who was in, he went to my school, but we were in the Cubs together as well. And it was one summer, we were out in the playground where we had Cubs. We had Cubs in the school. And he climbed up on the roof of the school. This is an old Victorian school. And he got up the drain pipe and climbed up on the roof of the school.
That seems a lot easier to me, because the drain pipe is fixed to the wall.
Right.
So you can pull against it and know it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And you can create leverage. But just climbing a rope, of all things,
yeah,
just a dangling rope, you'd need massive upper body strength.
Yeah, well, that's what you need, isn't it? That's what you need. I mean, I could never do it, really. Again, it was that thing. I used to dread that, going back to talking about the thing in the school hall where they put out the fucking ropes and shit. And I used to hate that when you had PE and you'd go in and the ropes would be out and you go, I know this is going to be an hour of humiliation for me where I can't do any of this sort of shit.
What were they like at your school for the kids who weren't keen or didn't fancy it or had little to no athletic prowess? Did they insist they had a go at it anyway?
Oh God, you had to give it a go. Yeah. I mean, at my secondary school, I mean, one of the things I used to fucking hate was cross country. Do you ever do cross country?
Yeah, we were forced to do a bit of that.
Yeah. But we had this thing where the course, I mean, it wasn't even that far. It was probably 2 miles, so it wasn't that far, but you had to do it in under half an hour, and if you didn't do it in under half an hour, you had to do it again at lunchtime.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you really had to put the effort in. You couldn't sort of saunter around.
Were there any blind spots that lent themselves to corner cutting?
No, there was one bit where you try and corner cut if you could, but they were smart to that. These teachers have been there fucking years, all these old codgers, all these fucking old sadomasochistic twats that had taught at his school for years. They knew everywhere that you could cut, so they would stand in those positions. And if you tried, that was it. You were done for. Like, there's no way you're going to get away with it.
See, these days, you could hide a sort of electric scooter in there. and you know, in the longer grass,
yeah,
that you could just pick it up and look like you're suddenly gliding along a lot faster. No one would ever know.
I reckon they'd see, because you've got to hold on to it in the hand. You want a hoverboard is what you want, but you know, like those hoverboards that you can
see. So you can still pump your arms convincingly.
Yeah, you can still look like you're running. Now, you know, I like a bit of an odd news story, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
I came across a sort of catalogue of historic weird news stories.
Oh, brilliant.
So I thought I'd share a couple of these. Now, the first ones that I came across are from the 1900s, right? So this is 1900 to 1910. These were the sort of news stories that were seen as the funny bits that were put in the newspapers.
So these would have been the things we'd have been trawling through back in the day for, you know, our old radio station to try and find. But in 1910, this would have been what we'd have been doing on The Breakfast Show.
Yeah, yeah. If we were doing The Breakfast Show in 19... Well, this one's from 1903, right? So if we were doing the breakfast... We'd be talking very much like that, I would imagine, if we were doing The Breakfast Show in 1903. so this is... the headline is Phonograph School of Languages for Parrots. So in Philadelphia in 1903, a school opened that was described as the only institution of its kind in the world. Well, I would imagine there wouldn't be anywhere else like this. And it taught parrots to speak by means of the new technology of the phonograph.
Okay.
The founder had a record that repeated the phrase, "Polly wants a cracker," 1,000 times. She did later expand it to other phrases. The fee for a 6-month term for your parrot was $40, but more if you wanted the bird to be taught French or German sentences. And I thought, surely you could teach, if all you want your parrot to say is Polly wants a cracker, you'd have to be, and bear in mind this is 1903, I'd imagine $40, that's quite a lot of money, surely.
Yeah.
You'd have to have more money than sense to send your parrot to a school just to come home after a term, a whole fucking term, with just Polly wants a cracker.
I mean, what practical use is there? I mean, let's say you can teach your parrot to say Polly wants a cracker.
Yeah.
So fucking what?
And that's got to be an easy thing for you to teach a parrot to say. They're very good and quick at picking up things. I reckon if I had a parrot, I think that if I had a parrot, maybe within 2 weeks of just me saying it to it often enough, it would start saying it.
I think so. I agree with that.
My aunt used to have just budgies, and some of them would talk and say, "Pretty boy." I don't know if she ever taught them to say Polly wants a cracker. Might have done. There was one that would blow kisses. Learned to blow kisses. Hmm. And these were just budgies. You know, we were very easy to teach. Just a budgie. So if I had a parrot, I'm not going to pay $40 for someone. And if that's the case, I reckon just give me the fucking record.
Yeah.
If you've got it 1,000 times on a record, if I'm giving you $40 for a 6-month term, I suppose a phonograph would have been more expensive in those days. But if you've got that sort of money, surely just get a phonograph, get the record. It sounds like a con.
Polly wants a refund.
Right. Here's another one. This is from 1906. Death of the Human Ostrich.
I'm listening.
Robert Naismith, who made a living by exhibiting himself as a human ostrich.
Can I guess?
Yeah, go on.
Did he asphyxiate himself by burying his head in the sand?
I don't think that's what happened. No, I think ultimately the act that he used to do was probably the death of him. I mean, I don't know why he called himself the human ostrich. I don't know much about an ostrich. I don't think they do bury their heads in the sand. That's sort of a bit of a myth, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
But I'm not quite sure what the diet of an ostrich is, but I bet none of these are in it, because he would swallow nails, glass, hat pins and stones. And an autopsy revealed that the nails and hat pins, which riddled his body, were the cause of his death. Well, no shit.
Yeah, I'd have thought so. Probably tearing him to shreds and causing tetanus and God knows what.
But, I mean, why would you call... I don't understand why you call yourself the human ostrich.
No, the human dustbin, the human skip, yeah. something like that, not the ostrich.
Do you remember when I was a kid and Record Breakers was on with Roy
you
Castle?
You do talk disproportionately about Record Breakers.
It was bloody Brit Roy Castle. In the latter years, it was Cheryl Baker and I think Chris Akabusi. I might be wrong.
Awooga.
Well, that's the wrong one, isn't it?
I know. We've been down this rabbit hole before.
Awooga, I think, was John Fashanu on Gladiator.
Yeah, we've been down this whole catastrophe yeah. before, yeah.
Right, so you probably don't remember this, but there was a man who would appear quite often on that and probably on Blue Peter and stuff, and he would eat everything, like glass he would eat, and nails, and anything people gave him, he would eat. I think he might still be alive, but I don't think that can be good for you.
No, I imagine it's not, no.
I had a mate at primary school who would eat a lot of weird things. He used to eat, and I'm sure in the end, like, this is one of my best mates at primary school, but I don't know whether in the end he just did it because people were egging him on the whole time. But he would eat plastic rulers. He'd break bits off, and he'd get through like a whole ruler. not necessarily wow. one go, but over a period of maybe a few days. He'd eat pencils, maybe bits of plastic pen he'd break off. I mean, I caught up with him a few years ago, first time I'd seen him for years. I was amazed he was still alive. I did have the gall to say to him when we went for a pint, I went, do you want a ruler with that? I because he might not remember he used to do that.
Yeah, well, that's probably peer pressure, I imagine.
Yeah, I'd have thought so. I'd have thought we probably put, because the moment he started doing it, we must have thought this was incredible. And he used to eat rubbers as well.
I don't imagine that'd do you much harm.
I suppose not. It's a natural substance, isn't it? But you don't know what chemicals they put in. And bear in mind, this is the 80s when a lot of rubbers, they'd have a lot of strong smells put in. All those chemicals, surely they couldn't have been any good.
No, probably not, no.
Right, I'll give you one more. This is from February 1907. Headline is, Wynn's headstanding wager loses life.
Repeat that again for me.
Wynn's headstanding wager loses life. This is a man called Harry Stilson who made a wager that he could stand on his head for 20 minutes, most of the time without the support of his hands. He won the bet and set a new local record, which makes you think this is a thing that people were doing. It was like a sport, stand on your head for as long as you can. But the next morning, he fell unconscious and then died.
That's quite a sad story.
The autopsy said he died as a result of standing on his head too long. Well, don't stand on your head.
And now, I think that the newspaper headline writers of the day weren't doing a very good job.
Right, have you got a better headline then?
Heads you lose.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't seem too impressed with that.
No, I mean, it's quite good. It's quite good. Heads you lose.
Well, you're coming up with nothing.
I can't think of anything better. Can't think of anything better.
You're out of practice. We need to get back on the radio quick.
No one wants that.
So, Trev, as you know, but I'm not sure the listeners do, at my job, I've recently had to leave the route I've been doing for 2 years that I love, and I've been forced into doing a different route.
Mm.
So after about 10 years, the company I work for decided to look at everything and think, we've got some computers and some management who think we can do things more efficiently. So we're going to change everybody's route. You've all got to sign for a new route, and we're going to do it in order of seniority. So the people who have been here the shortest, you're at the bottom of the pile, essentially left with all the shit that no one else wants to do.
Right. Okay. You've only been there a couple of years.
Yeah. So I think I was number 56 out of 60 people or something.
Oh, you are getting the dregs, the absolute shite.
So I'm now on this new route, and yeah, the people there haven't been all that welcoming.
Oh, right. They don't, the customers, you mean?
Yeah.
Don't like a change of postman. They've had a postman who's probably been very good for several years. And now they've suddenly got the new boy, doesn't know what he's doing, making a hash of things, falling over, walking over their new lawns.
I'd say three or four of them have noticed and actually approached me about it and said, oh, where's our usual girl?
Oh.
And I said, well, there's actually been a bit of a change up at my place of work, and I'm now your regular. And they've just straight up looked back at me and gone, oh.
I mean, I don't want to cast aspersions on your predecessor. These people that have approached you, you don't think there was any anything going on there, and suddenly their little bit of extra delivery, special delivery, has been taken away.
No, they are people of all genders, these people. Not that that makes it impossible, of course, but no. Yes, I don't think. Mind you, she did often finish very late, so
well,
maybe that explains it.
Yeah, she's stopping off for special deliveries.
No, but she was very, very sweet when she was very upset to realise that I was taking over her route. Which I felt a bit bad about. And then she went to the effort of writing me out a page of notes as to like, dangerous dog here, sweet old lady lives here, might want to check on her once a week.
This one likes how his balls tickled, that sort of thing.
So I think she was very sweet and she really went the extra mile for them.
I think
they were genuinely gutted to have me replace them. But then they don't know. I know what they're trying to portray. They're trying to portray, oh God, we've lost our lovely postie.
Yeah.
But what they're sort of unwittingly doing is saying, oh fuck, we're stuck with you then, are we?
Basically. Yeah.
That's how it feels, you know?
Yeah.
That might be not what they said, but it's how it feels to me. And I have feelings too.
You're taking it very personally.
Yeah. And the area isn't... it's not as...
come on, man. Spit it out.
It's not quite as classy as the area I've been used to.
Oh, right.
A few people have been giving me special instructions as to where to hide their parcels when they're not in, because apparently things have been going missing, they've told me ominously.
Are you not supposed to... Oh, I suppose if there's a special place to leave things, like that's, you can do that, can't you? But you're not allowed to just leave it on the doorstep, are you?
Moving on. So,
seems like you're leaving stuff just on the doorstep. No wonder they're not happy. He's like, oh, I'll just leave it there in plain sight.
Now,
you might as well just stick a stick on it and steal me.
And the real thing, I think, speaks volumes of my new route.
Yeah.
Is some of the signage that has been put up around the place.
Like, fuck off, new postie.
Well, there's a lot of the... there's a lot of the no junk mail thing stuck on door... You know, letterboxes, which I'm used to.
Yeah.
And
We know you roundly ignore that anyway.
Yeah, I do roundly ignore that. Mainly because, I've bored you with this before, Royal Mail don't think of it as junk mail. They think of it as door-to-door mail.
Oh, it's so fucking pedantic. It's still shit you're peddling and shoving through the letterbox.
Some letterboxes say no leaflets, no pizza menus, no this, no that. And then they list everything they don't want. And then, of course, I have to shove it through anyway. And
we don't have to, Ben. You don't have to shove it through. Listen. I don't know why you're shoving it through when they're being very clear about the demands.
Here is my bugbear with this. Now, you are a reasonable man, right?
Fairly.
What is more reasonable? Is it more reasonable to expect one postman to remember the personal preferences for junk mail for the 500 plus houses he delivers to his route
and make a fuss about it?
Or is it more reasonable that once a week, just once a week, you bend over, you pick it up, you put it in the bin?
Well, first of all, let me take issue with your first point.
Go ahead.
You're not being asked to remember the personal preferences. They've got it on signage on the doors. So you're not being asked to remember anything. So all you got to do is look at the sign and go, oh, they don't want this shit today. I'm not putting it through.
On one of my first days, I was going around, of course, ignoring all of these letterboxes with their various specific commands.
Yeah.
And the very next day I went round again, someone had pushed back through the letterbox halfway, so it stayed there.
Yeah.
All the junk mail I'd put through, and they'd scribbled all over it with a big arrow and said, brilliant, read this.
Brilliant.
And it pointed at their no junk mail sign.
Brilliant.
Do you know what I did?
You pushed it back through, didn't you?
I pushed it back through.
And then you start of this, you're saying, oh, I don't know why they dislike me. They dislike you because you're an antagonistic... Well, I can't think of a polite word to put in there.
Thing is, they're not going to pick a fight with me, though, are they? Because it was easy to pick a fight with the postie when it was a 5-foot-nothing little blonde lady who's sweet as pie who goes and checks on the local elderly people. But the 6-foot-4 skinhead, they're not going to start a fight with me.
Well, maybe one day they will. I mean, this is the risk you're taking. It's all very well to be very bolshy about they're not going to pick a fight with me. But what if that person who's made it very clear, they've even gone the extra mile of putting extra signage up on one occasion, and you very It's not even passive aggressive. It's just aggressive. You've just aggressively pushed it back through.
But that's because I feel they escalated it. I did my job. They went passive aggressive.
Well, you haven't done your
with
job.
It, with it pushing it back through. So then I skipped passive aggressive and I went straight back to aggressive and shoved it back through.
No, I mean, you haven't done your job, because surely your job as a postman is to respect your customers' wishes.
My job is to deliver their fucking mail. Well, yeah, not respect their wishes.
No, deliver their mail. Deliver the stuff that is addressed specifically to them. But all the other shit that you're having to peddle, they've made it very clear they don't want.
There's been a lot of it this week as well. A lot of door-to-door mail. I'm thinking of saving up 10 weeks worth and then dumping it all through at once.
I tell you what really annoys me is when they shove it through and there's no mail for me at all. There's actually nothing addressed to me, but they've still come up the pathway and shoved their shit through my letterbox. That annoys me. And there on the mat is just pizza leaflets or some other shit I don't want. And I just think, surely you've... It would have been easier for you to walk past this house because you had nothing specific to put through.
We've got to clear it. It's got to be gone by the end of the week.
I'm beginning to think it's such a terrible waste of resources.
So anyway, I'm really hoping they don't start a fight with the big 6'4" skinhead, because I might look terrifying, but I'll probably go down like with a stiff breeze if they try to attack me. I'm such a wimp.
Well, we know you. I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, you'd injured yourself massively just falling over nothing. By just turning round, you'd managed to sprain your ankle.
Oh, Luis Suarez would have been proud of me that week, I tell you.
So, I mean, if you get someone who just really takes... I mean, what will you do if that person, let's just say he's a big, burly bloke, right? And he's waiting for you now, and the next time he sees you, he opens the door and he really goes at you. How will you respond?
I'll have to stand my ground and I'll have to go in with the
things you've not got a response. You've not got a leg to stand on.
Oh, I do. I do. I also think it's unreasonable that if 500 people put up no junk mail signs, then I'm expected to lug it round East Grinstead like some sort of camel. Well, you know how much that stuff weighs?
Well, it's not about you.
It is about me. It's about my bloody knees. And then maybe, which, as I've told you in the last weeks, are shot because of all this shit.
And maybe your employers would get the message, we don't want this shit. We don't want it. I think more people need to make a stand. That's my message to all of our listeners this week, is get those signs. Start putting them up on your doors. Let's get all this fucking shit stopped coming through our doors. We don't want it. We're not interested. I'm not saying abuse the postie, but
no.
I think the postie has to respect the wishes of the householder. And if there's a sign up, to take that seriously.
Well, speaking of signs, I knew you'd be on their side, because you can never just be on my side, can you, ever?
Because I don't think you've got any justification for your actions.
Well, I'll let you know what these people are like. Some of these people have put up not just the no junk mail on their doorbell. Yeah, some of them have put up other little signs as well.
Okay.
And just to show you that I'm used to dealing with possibly a slightly more high class clientele. And I'm now possibly dealing with the slums. I'm going to read you some of these signs that are on.
Slums. Since you've moved to East Grinstead, I don't know what's happened to you. You've got
these
all
are some of the
hoity
signs.
Toity.
This is a sticker stuck inside someone's window. It reads, no cold callers.
Good. I'm all for that.
We are too broke to buy anything.
Good. Excellent.
We know who we are voting for. We have found Jesus. Seriously, unless you are selling cookies, please go away.
I love that. I absolutely love that. I don't like being like cold callers. I don't like people knocking at my door. If I'm not expecting somebody, I don't like it. I see what happened the other day, right? So I was talking to my dad the other day, and I was talking about how it's been quite nice throughout lockdown that a lot of the cold callers on both the phone and doorstep went away, because presumably the call centres were shut and people weren't allowed to go door to door.
Yes.
They've picked up a little bit recently. I get a few cold calls on the phone and I've had a few chuggers knock at the door.
Ugh.
And as much as I want to support their cause. I tell you what pisses me off about the chugger is you open the door and it's often a very smiley person going, "Hi, I'm Alan, and it's lovely to see you today. I can see you're looking smiley. You having a good day?" And he's like, "Oh, just get to the fucking point. You want me to sign up monthly to some charity which I believe in the cause, but I can't afford to give you any money monthly." And then they'll read this whole long spiel that they've got, and then in the end I always say to them, I say, "Look, I'm not really in a position to give you anything monthly, but I tell you what, I'll give you a one-off little donation now." And they go, "I can't do that." So what do you mean you can't do that?
Oh, they want the details. They want the monthly subscription.
Exactly. Right? And it's like, yep, just fuck off. Right? And they're fucking persistent, right? So a couple of weeks ago, I saw them coming down the road and they knocked on my door and I ignored it. Then later on in the day, the doorbell went again. I looked out. There they were again. And then it got really sort of late evening, about 8 o'clock. So I wasn't paying attention outside. The doorbell rang and I went and opened it because I just thought that time of night, it's probably going to be one of the family. It's going to be the next door neighbour with a problem. And it's the fucking chugger again.
At 8 p.m. Like, that's
yes,
a bit late.
And it's like, you first knocked at about 2 o'clock this afternoon. It's like fucking persistent. And it's like really pisses me off.
Well, I'll move on to the next
one. Oh, no, sorry. What I was going to say was, sorry, I didn't get to my point there. I got too ranty.
Go on.
But so I'm talking to my dad about this, and he went, "I'll tell you what happened the other day. I got a phone call from Jehovah's Witnesses." And they said, "Oh, we're not coming door to door at the moment, so we're now doing phone calls." You think, bloody hell.
Like, oh, you think that's bad? I got a handwritten letter from the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Did you?
Yeah. I couldn't believe it. It was second class mail. That's the other kick in the bollocks. The Jehovah's Witnesses are now writing, not printing it off, handwriting to everyone in East Grinstead, and I'm having to fucking deliver it.
Yeah, but you're happily delivering all the other shit. At least this stuff's addressed to someone. I mean, they don't want it, but because I've had a couple, not Jehovah's Witnesses, but during lockdown, I had a couple of letters from some church group recently. But the weird thing is they sent me two, because my house has got a house name.
Yes, it does.
Which is bizarrely Trevina.
Which isn't a vanity name, is it? It's not like you named it. It just happens to be Trevina.
The house has always been called Trevina. And I don't know wherever these people go to get addresses, it's listed as Trevina, then my address. And then maybe another one with just, because I get two letters, one with it addressed to Trevina with the address, and then one without the Trevina. So I get two of these. I think, God, the money you are spending on stamps that your church could be putting towards fucking food banks or something good. But no, you're shoveling shit through my door. Anyway.
Me and Mrs. Ben have often been wondering what we could name this house, because we like the idea of having a name for the house. Yeah. And now I'm thinking, well, surely Benina.
Benina.
Yeah. Has to be. In a little nod to you.
Benina. Why not?
Yeah. So anyway, back to the signs. Now, I just read you the first one. The second one is very much along the same lines, but this one is actually a plastic sign, and it's screwed into brick, and it's much more aggressive, and it's got mock bullet holes across the sign to add a certain level of aggression to it. Now, this reads, again, very similar, "No cold calling."
Yeah.
"We have no money. We don't trust any politician."
Yeah.
"We found Jesus and sent him back."
Right.
"Unless you're giving away beer, go away." I must say, I respect all of that, but it's slightly aggressive, especially with the old bullet holes.
Yeah, the only thing about that is it finishes with "unless it's beer," which is sort of jokey, I think. So I think it undermines itself a little bit with that sort of jokey bit. But again, I would say the message to anyone coming to that address with any unwanted marketing material, the message is very, very clear.
Okay, so now I'm going to move towards the two last signs or messages I found, and these don't even mention their preference in anything.
Right.
They don't mention the junk mail, they don't mention the door-to-doors, they don't mention cold callers. The first of which is a large, bespoke, and I mean large, bespoke wooden sign drilled into the brick and held up well.
Yeah.
It reads, "Hello, welcome, now piss off."
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Now, I'm hoping to win you over with this. And this one is especially dear to my heart because, as you know, I have a certain affection for doormats.
Yes.
I have a personalised doormat, which is the crown jewel of my house, which you kindly gave to me for Christmas.
Yes.
Including a fantastic quote from Fraser, which really, I'm sure, I think if anyone came to my house, looked at the doormat, knocked on my door and I answered, and they said, is that a Fraser quote? I think I could marry that person.
Right, okay.
Or shake them by the hand.
Yeah.
This doormat...
That's quite a difference in approach there, response. Either shake them by the hand or marry them.
It's kind of, you know, gender permitting.
Right, okay.
The final doormat. Now imagine if this is your doormat. This is the first thing people see when they walk up to your house. Come the fuck in or fuck the fuck off.
But again, I quite like that. It's to the point. But the only thing I'd say about...
It's managed to put the word fuck three times on the doormat, which I quite like.
The only thing I'd say about that is it's sort of inviting you in. So if you're a door-to-door salesperson and you're selling whatever shit you've got to sell... This person's basically saying, I don't want to have a conversation with you on the doorstep. So they're going to say, well, then I'll come in. And the moment they're through that threshold, they've got you.
So yours would just read, fuck the fuck
just
off.
Fuck off. Well, there we are. That's it for this week. Just before we go, I've got one recommendation for you this week. It's a film called Nobody. It's available to rent on Sky. It's not cheap to rent, but it is a cracking film.
Okay.
It stars Bob Odenkirk.
Oh, he's not been very well recently.
No, I mean, only this week he's ended up in hospital. I think he's going to be all right. But
he's going to be okay.
He was filming the new series of Better Call Saul and he had a bit of I don't know if it was a mild heart attack, but anyway, I think he's going to be all right. But the film's called Nobody, and he's sort of plays this, I suppose he's a bit of an action hero. I mean, it's one of the most ridiculous films I've ever seen, but it is very good. And I don't know whether it's supposed to be funny or not, but I found it quite funny. It is also incredibly violent at times. It's a bit like the Danish film I mentioned last week that was very violent but funny. And this is very much the same, because I also found it quite hard to take Bob Odenkirk seriously as an action hero.
Yeah, I imagine it probably must be more comedy leaning, surely.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's obviously sort of some government spy who's very much underground, and you don't mess with him. But it's a cracking film. I really recommend that.
I'd like to recommend a series called Motherland, which the first two series can be found on Netflix. Series 3 is out, but I think episode 1 has not much time to live on catch up before it all gets wiped. So you're going to have to get a shimmy on if you want to see series 3 in time. But yeah, it's really quite good.
That's got Diane Morgan in it, isn't it?
Who I love. I think she's brilliant in everything.
Yeah.
I want to say as well, I've now started watching... I've only seen the first episode, but I've started watching Clarkson's Farm.
Oh, yes.
It's absolutely brilliant.
It is, isn't it?
I do at times want to shake Clarkson because he's kind of got this... I'm not going to call it smug, but maybe a sort of, oh, surely I can do this more efficiently type attitude. And it just annoys me at times because you think, come on, don't you think the people who have been doing this for generations know slightly better than you?
Well, that's the beauty of the show, because if you're only on episode 1, it's Clarkson, so he's never going to lose that entirely, right? But there are moments where he realises he's out, he's dead. Do you know the thing about that Clarkson's Farm is, I think, as I mentioned when I recommended it a couple of weeks ago, my reaction when I was told, oh, it's Clarkson, I don't want to watch it, and then it's fucking brilliant. Everyone I've spoken to has seen it pretty much the same. I tried to sell it to my parents the other day, and my dad used to love Top Gear and Clarkson, right? I don't know if he liked Clarkson, but he used to like Top Gear, so I thought, oh, he might be up for this. And I said, oh, Dad, you must watch it. And I don't think he's going to. He's the first person that I don't think I'm going to be able to convince.
I've got a similar dilemma with my parents. I tried to convince them that they would enjoy the documentary Don't Fuck With Cats.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
but they can't shake the idea that they don't want to see anything to do with cat cruelty. And I'm saying, okay, I admit it does include a bit of that, but it is still such a good watch. And but they just can't seem to get over that. And they won't listen. And I've had to walk away and say, okay, yeah, just going to have to live and let live here. It's your choice and I respect it, even though I disagree.
Talking of your dad, last week he recommended the Hurricane tapes.
Oh, yes, he did, yeah.
I've got, I think, two more left.
How is it?
It's very, very good. So, excellent. Yeah, top marks, your dad. Very much enjoyed that. So that's on the BBC Sounds app if you haven't listened to that yet. So there we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. If you want to get in touch about anything, we're at Trev and Ben on Twitter. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye. We'll